You're listening to Sounds Good here on WKMS. I'm Todd Hatton, joined in the studio by Kate Lochte. Kate?
Good afternoon to Dr. Ray Seddon and Captain Hoot Gibson. We're speaking with y'all, I reckon, from your home in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, yes?
That's correct.
Coming up next weekend, the 24th and 25th, you two are going to be the stars of programming at the Discovery Park of America in Union City. Friday night, there's a dinner with you all, and then you're going to be in the gallery, meet the astronauts Sunday afternoon with kids invited to pick up free signed autographs for first 200 kids. And you're also loaning your suits to the Discovery Park for this time. Can we start by you telling me where you wore these suits that are going to be on display?
Sure, Kate. We have two of our flight suits that Ray and I wore. Of course, she wore hers and I wore mine. And these are not the space suits because, although we'd love to have kept our space suits that actually went in orbit, they're over $100,000 each, and so NASA keeps them and reuses them. So these are the flight suits, Nomex or treated cotton to be somewhat fireproof, that we wore every time we flew the T-38s, the jet trainers that we flew. And we would wear them pretty much for appearances, too, when we'd go on the road and make an appearance.
Are you both still flying together in the T-38s?
No, unfortunately, NASA kept those, and when we moved back to Tennessee, they wouldn't let us bring them with us.
Do you still fly together, though?
Yes. In fact, Kate, we are planning to fly over there. We're over in Murfreesboro, which is just to the east of Nashville, and it would be a 3.5-hour drive for us, and not quite an hour to fly over. I have a Beechcraft Bonanza, which is a 4-seat propeller plane, and that's my plan, is that we will fly over there, and it won't even take us an hour if we can take the airplane. The only thing that can get in the way would be snow and ice and freezing weather. Well, freezing weather is okay, but freezing precipitation would mean we'll get to drive.
Now, Captain Gibson, you're a Top Gun man, and you are the subject of lots of articles about people who fly fast and often, and an outstanding one is Robin White's interview with you in the May 2009 Air and Space magazine, where he quotes someone as saying that you don't fly planes, you wear planes.
Well, I've seen that. I've seen that in print in several places, and I guess that's one of the measures that people use to say, well, this is really a pilot. He doesn't climb into an airplane, he wears the airplane. I wouldn't describe myself that way, but I've been very fortunate, and I've flown more than 140 different types of airplanes, helicopters, gliders, and so on. And I love aviation, I love flying. And this is some of the excitement that we're hoping to bring to young people at the Discovery Park of America next Friday and Saturday.
So, Captain Gibson, you flew 5 shuttle flights, and Dr. Seddon, you flew 3 shuttle flights, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Yes, and I should say that after 4 missions, my 4 missions in the shuttle, and Ray's 3 missions, she had more time in space than I did in 3 flights when I had flown 4 flights, and that's because she flew 3 relatively long missions, and in fact, I think her 3rd mission set a duration record for the space shuttle, and I had 1 or 2 missions that were relatively short. So I had to fly a 5th time before I had as much time in space as she did.
Well, you know, I'd like to take the opportunity to thank you for your service to America. And Dr. Seddon, you were a payload commander. Was that the long flight that your husband just alluded to?
That's correct. 2 of my 3 flights were science flights. We studied what happens to living things when they go into space, including humans and rats. And on the third flight, I was kind of in charge of all of the in-flight science experiments, and that was a nice leadership role for me, and kind of in recognition that I had done a good job on my first two flights, and then they put me in charge of the science on the third.
Humans and rats, are they kind of in the same category?
Well, we wanted to find that out, whether they acted the same in space as they do here on the ground.
Well, I suppose all of us who've never had your experiences think of being confined in the ways that you have been confined might be akin to a rat in a cage.
Kind of.
What are the implications of the experiments that you completed, Dr. Seddon?
Well, I think what we were trying to find out is how humans adapt to being in space and whether there's any, I guess what we'd call maladaptions, some changes that you would like to be able to prevent or to treat in preparation for longer duration missions or for really in preparation when I was flying for long-duration space station missions. But certainly we'd like to go to Mars, and we'd like to be healthy when we get there. So we were studying things like bone loss and muscle deterioration and balance disorders and some things like that. And for the most part, humans adapt quite well. There are some changes that are reversible when you come back, but we want to be prepared for those longer duration missions because those are going to be pretty exciting, and astronauts want to do a good job on those.
And bone loss, does that have any application to life here on Earth?
That's true. Many of the things we studied will be useful to know. For instance, how does gravity keep calcium in your bones? And for people who lose calcium as they age, what can we do about that? And studying it in the absence of gravity, of course, will help us to understand the mechanisms and perhaps be able to prevent not only bone loss in space, but bone loss on the ground.
Dr. Seddon, if you were a betting woman, when would you say we'd have a mission to Mars, manned mission to Mars?
Oh, that's pretty difficult. I think it depends upon the will of the American people. I think we can develop the technology over the next perhaps 5 to 10 years. We can answer a lot of the science questions by being on the space station as we are currently. But unless NASA receives the funding to build the rockets and to do the research necessary to get there, both scientific and technical, it's going to be a while. I think certainly we could do it within the next 10 years if we all express an interest in doing so.
That would be pretty cool.
It would.
Captain Gibson, correct me now. Am I on the money saying you were flying the Atlantis when we were all worried that you weren't going to make it?
Well, yes, I was. I did fly Atlantis the first time I flew it, which was my third mission in 1988. And we had a little bit of a close call. We got hit by debris that came from one of the booster rockets, and it hit our right wing, which is somewhat similar to what happened when we lost the space shuttle Columbia in 2003. They got hit by debris on their left wing. In their case, it put a hole in the wing. In our case, it destroyed over 700 tiles, or damaged, at least damaged, over 700 tiles. And we were in danger of burning through during the reentry. It was a classified mission, so I'm not sure how much of this was out in the press at the time, but it was for me a little bit of a close call during the reentry.
Now, I understand, Captain Gibson, that your mom was a pilot.
Mom and Dad were both pilots, and so that's where the incentive, the motivation, the wherewithal to do all that, it was something very natural. And I'm a family of four boys and two girls, and three of us wound up being pilots. And, I'm sorry, four of us wound up being pilots. Don't leave out my sister. Four of us wound up being pilots. And so Mom and Dad were role models for us and pointed the way and certainly the direction that I went with my career and my life.
After leaving NASA in the service, you flew for Southwest and then had to obey the rules about retirement. But you, do I understand correctly, you are still racing planes?
Yes, I was fortunate to fly for 10 years for Southwest Airlines. I got to be a co-pilot for 5 years and then a captain for 10 years. Subsequent to that, I still do flight testing, and I still do race in the Reno Air Races. And in 2012, had my best finish ever, which was second place overall out of about 30 of the unlimited category airplanes, second place. And I plan to race again this year. So I'm still very much involved in aviation and very much involved in flying.
Okay, how fast do you go at Reno?
Well, I set a record, not this year, but 2013, when I qualified at 480 miles an hour in a Sea Fury. This is racing that's done at very low altitude. We're about 50 feet above the ground.
Whoa.
And we race 8 and 9 airplanes simultaneously at the same time. And so it can be a little bit hectic, and it certainly is very exciting.
My colleague here at WKMS is covering his face as you speak.
It sounds scary to me. This sounds frightening to me.
Dr. Seddon, flying is not as genetic for you as it appears to have been for your husband. Your dad was a lawyer in Murfreesboro?
Well, actually, Murfreesboro is my hometown. I grew up here. My mother's family's been here since the early 1800s, and we wanted to raise our three children here. So it's a wonderful place. Tennessee is a wonderful state, and that's why we came back. And I was fortunate enough to become the assistant chief medical officer at Vanderbilt for a number of years, so a wonderful medical center here close by. So. No, I'm afraid that the flying part for me was a way to get to space and not the fun profession that my husband finds it to be.
Does that mean that you aren't a licensed pilot?
Well, I am. I am a licensed pilot. I had my pilot's license before I went to NASA. Probably one of the reasons that I was accepted into the astronaut corps.
Well, what if your spouse became an astronaut because he wanted to fly the highest flying, fastest planes, why did you decide to become a NASA astronaut?
Well, I think primarily I had been interested from a very early age about what would happen to humans when they went into the space environment. There were a lot of questions, and I wanted to be able to do the studies, particularly on women, before the space shuttle. We had not studied women in space, and so that really fascinated me. I think one of the things too was to be one of the first women and help to prove that women, as we say, had a place in space. And it was going to be an interesting journey, and it certainly was. So I think for those two reasons, that's why I sought those opportunities and was fortunate enough to be able to live my dream.
Well, we're so fortunate that you two could pick up the phone today. And again, thank you for your service to our country. And gosh, I hope you have a big time with the folks at the Discovery Park of America. Again, let's say that you are going to be there for dinner on the 24th. And everyone's invited to dine with the astronauts, and then you're going to be there again Sunday afternoon from 1 to 3, the 25th, is that right?
That's correct.
Excellent.
We're planning to be there and to get a chance to meet all of the good folks in Union City and from around that area and tell them a little bit about our lives.
How exciting. Excuse me.
We're really excited to see Discovery Park of America ourselves. We've looked at it online and seen pictures of it, but it looks really exciting. Can't wait to see it.
That's in fact the case. Let's wrap up by saying that our listeners can find more at discoveryparkofamerica.com. Captain Hoot Gibson, Dr. Ray Seddon, thank you again for being with us.
It's great to talk to you, Kate.
Thank you, Kate.